Welcome, welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore. I am your co-host, Andrew McPeak.
Andrew, why do you say welcome twice?
I want people to feel really welcome.
Oh, okay. So it's just deeper.
It's just okay. Joy.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. You didn't know I was going to ask that, but welcome, welcome.
Welcome, welcome. I got to say one more thing before.
Okay.
About our mission.
Yes, please.
So our mission is to empower the next generation with skills to lead in real life. So
absolutely.
Now let's move on
okay,
to
yes, I'm so sorry.
talking about parenting, because parenting is a really it's a very important subject. I feel like lots of things are changing, but one of the biggest things that's changing is that millennials are now entering into the parenting game.
Yeah, they are. Millennials are the new parents. So these young adults that used to be the kids 10, 15 years ago are now grown-ups having babies. They're having fewer babies, because they're often very busy with careers and so forth, but Gen Z are now the kids, and millennials are now the parents. And it's very interesting. Some of the earliest data is coming out. I do love this. Some of the earliest data came out from Canada on millennial parents.
Okay.
And it was noted that they are saying, I don't want to do what my mom and dad did to me. So they're realizing, I love mom and dad, but I want to do some things different.
Mm.
So some of the differences are good, some are questionable.
And we have found that they are doing some things different. Yeah. I think maybe the jury's still out on exactly what millennial parents will be like.
Yeah.
But we have started to notice,
yeah,
just sort of coincidentally in conversations and meeting with different people, some new trends that are happening because millennials are now parents. They're sort of changing the game.
It's true. For instance, the tablet is the new pacifier. So here's this iPad, you know, that's just this little piece. It used to be a pacifier was something you put in the child's mouth to keep it quiet.
Yes.
Well, you got that child quiet. If you just put a little tab in their hand, they learn to stroke the screen, and, you know, it's a touch screen, and they can do all kinds of games or whatever.
It's very funny.
So,
very funny.
So the new pacifier, it is a pacifier. It pacifies the child.
Yes.
But they're using their fingers.
And I have seen it in action. It works, which is why a lot of parents think this is the key strategy. So
that's exactly right.
Especially if you're trying to keep your kid from crying, that's a technique that you would really want.
Yeah, yeah. So here's another one. The camera is the new babysitter. So if you give a child the smartphone, eventually a child gets a smartphone. That camera is oh my gosh, they're playing there and it's just amazing. But times were, play was something you did outside, unsupervised often.
Yeah.
And I mean, our teammate Gabby was just saying when she was 3 or 4 years old, she was on those skates, probably skinning her knee several times, you know, so forth. But now that would be dangerous.
One other thing I've seen that's so fascinating is millennial parents will hire a babysitter to watch their kid, right?
Yes.
But they'll still watch their kid while the babysitter's watching their kid from a camera on their smart device. So they're not really ever away. They're still kind of holding their phone, checking in. Yeah. It's really fascinating
so
how we do all that.
One that you even mentioned earlier, Netflix is the new play. It's now we're playing, but our play is really what show do we want to watch on Netflix? And there's nothing wrong or evil about that. It's just a new day that we're in that's a little more sedentary.
Yes.
It's cognitive. We're thinking, perhaps, but we're not as active or outside as we used to be.
Absolutely.
For sure. Yeah.
And some of these changes, I think, are a consequence or a result of some different changes in what parents believe, I think. What they believe about their kids, what they believe about the world, what they believe about safety, and all those different kinds of things.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So in our podcast today, Andrew, we're going to, in just a minute, talk about four strategies for parenting Generation Z. Gen Z is the kids today.
Yes.
What I find fascinating is that we are a planning sort of generation. We plan our vacations. We plan our wedding. We plan our job, and we oftentimes plan our career. But very often we enter the parenting journey without a real good game plan.
Yeah.
So the most important thing we'll ever do, giving birth to another human being, we have no strategy. Or we may have a few cursory ideas, but we've not really thought it through, nor are we really ready. And the funny thing is, we got 9 months to get ready. When you know that child is coming, you've got almost a year to get ready, and yet here comes the child, and we're going, did a manual come out? Is there an app for that child?
Yeah, because a lot of us think maybe we have a plan for getting them dressed in the morning or a plan for keeping them safe but we don't have a plan for their development.
Yes.
How do I make them into a good human being?
That's really it. You're right. It's the development. How are we going to get them ready for adulthood? We always say we're not raising children, we're raising future adults.
It's so important. Yeah. So important. Okay, so let's first, before we talk about the strategies, I want to talk about how did we get here, and I think you've got some insight on that.
Well, I remember recently speaking at a school, and it was a group of parents. It was an evening meeting, and the school administrator, I think it was the assistant principal, stepped up to introduce me. And before he made the official introduction, he just wanted to ensure that the parents knew how safe the school was. So he just laid out, he said, I just want to remind you that no student at this school will be permitted to go to the restroom without an adult. I'm not kidding.
Wow.
All students must be with a buddy on the playground at all times, and no students are allowed to walk or ride their bike home from school. And you know me, I'm about to give my talk on, let them take a risk, let's do it. You know, and I'm thinking, I'm going to just undo everything that poor man has just said.
Yeah.
Now, I not literally, but you hear this, moms and dads, you hear this, employers and coaches and teachers, and you know, while that sounds really good, that's not going to be good for tomorrow,
yes,
for 10 years from now, when they need to be ready, and we've not let them do anything to get ready. So the phrase I often use is, we've done a much better job protecting than preparing.
Yeah. So. And it's a style of parenting, I really feel like, one that's changing.
Yeah.
And I want you to talk about that.
Okay. So the style we're talking about is prescriptive. There's a couple of social scientists now that are calling it paranoid parenting. We have a paranoid parenting style. And what the style is prescription. I'm going to prescribe every activity. In fact, I'm going to be with you at that activity. Soccer practice, karate, violin, piano recital, whatever it is they're doing. And they're doing seven after school activities. I'm going to be with you. And so it's adult supervised. And while that sounds good on the surface, Dr. John Gray at Boston College has said this is not doing a good number on our kids as they turn teenage or young adult. If they've had everything supervised and everything prescribed along
all
the way.
Of it designed for fear of what might happen if I don't step in.
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting that you use the word paranoia, because I definitely feel like that's what's going on, because we're not all of our decisions are not necessarily sort of grounded in reality, right?
Yeah.
Which is where that concept of paranoia comes from. Worrying about things, whether or not they're actually true.
Yeah.
I think there's probably no better descriptor of what's really happening and how we're raising our kids than worrying about things that are completely beyond the realm of possibility, but they're in our heads.
That's so true. So in the new Gen Z book we have coming out later this year, we talk about the placebo effect. It's kind of an interesting phenomenon that we've all heard of.
Yes.
The placebo effect got popular. It's actually hundreds of years old, but it got popular in the 20th century. When actually, for instance, in World War II, doctors that were having to perform surgery on wounded soldiers were running out of anesthesia. They were running out of any painkillers. And they thought, I cannot operate on this leg without a painkiller. But they didn't have any. And so they started doing the salt water drip or something like that. Say, well, let's take this. And when the soldier believed that was going to help my pain, it did, which is an illustration of what's going on in our head is just as powerful as what's going on in reality. So again, moms, dads, coaches, teachers, if you've got kids around you, just know our prescriptive and almost paranoid style is perhaps understandable, but it is not helpful in the long run. So we're just trying to make a change on that.
Yeah, and it comes from this belief that the world is less safe than it was before.
Yeah, that's right. And that's actually not true.
Yeah.
In fact, people would swear New York City is terribly dangerous. Well, since the 1990s, thanks to Mayor Rudy Giuliani and the police force and so forth, it's actually one of the safest cities in the world, over 1 million people.
Wow.
So that's crazy. Who would think that?
Yes.
But because we think, oh my gosh. And yet, you know, Lenore Stanofsky, who let her 9-year-old son ride on the subway, she got backlash from every parent, it seemed like, on her blog page, because I let my son ride the subway. Well, you're just a bad parent. So if we're letting our kids go, which we need to do, we're actually perceived by our peers as a bad parent. And I'm saying we got to change that narrative, because actually, I mean, if you're careless, you need to be careful, but we need to let our kids go.
Yeah, and it is really interesting, because I think it's gone from a norm of society to some sort of pressure that parents put on one another. And I've talked with more than one parent who said, I feel like I'm a bad parent if I don't do some of these things. And then I'm going to hear about it from other parents at my kid's school or whatever it is. So.
Keeping up with the Joneses isn't just a financial proposition.
Yes.
It's a social proposition.
It really is.
If the Joneses are doing something that seems safer, I'm not as good of a parent.
So far we've talked about what parents are doing, mm-hmm. But we here at Growing Leaders are thinking about the next generation. Mm-hmm. What's happening to them as a result of this?
Okay, so great question. I've got a handful of thoughts here. I actually think the unintended consequence or result are these. I think the outcomes of decades of working with students show us, number one, that kids, as a result of this kind of leadership, can start feeling entitled to special perks because we said they were special.
Yeah.
If you tell me I'm special for putting, I always say this, but for putting the fork in the dishwasher, why doesn't everybody rave about me and so forth? And we actually feel, they start feeling, if you think you can see a problem with entitlement with kids, go look in the mirror. We did it to them, I'm afraid, by the way we led them or our unthinking, unstrategic leadership.
Yes, I love that.
Number two, kids begin to feel unsafe, afraid, and even paranoid because of their parents' behavior. So they're reading our faces. And if we see fear on mom and dad's face or something like that, they're going to say, well, maybe the world is unsafe. They've been around longer than I have. Yes. Number three, kids begin believing that they were fragile and could not handle adversity. So we see this on college campuses all the time. They get there, and all the things we did to get them ready for college with a scholarship has made them less ready once they arrive.
Mm.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So they feel fragile. They want adults to make it safer, to take that controversial speaker off the campus, or whatever. And again, all of this is not helpful because really what's helpful is, I need to learn to navigate some hard situations where I don't agree with that speaker, but maybe I can eat the fish and spit out the bones, or maybe I can just not attend, but I don't need to have a demonstration that this is an unsafe campus.
Yes, yes. Well, it happens all the time. It's so interesting that we regularly see 4.0 students who enter into college and they don't have self-drive, they don't have personal discipline, and like you said, they seem to be emotionally fragile, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the key issues that we're facing, and it's definitely a result of this.
No doubt about it. Dr. Eric Mazur at Harvard University, a physics professor, was the one that really kind of popularized the flipped classroom. But he said, I was getting the smartest kids in the country coming to Harvard, mm-hmm. and they were so unready for college life and for science. And now he started turning the learning over to them, which is exactly what we're saying. Give them ownership, and you'll be amazed how they may rise to the occasion.
So interesting.
So the last one, number four, Andrew, is kids begin embracing the narrative that the world is full of evil people that could harm them.
Mm.
And it's a we versus they.
Yes.
And by the way, unfortunately, look at adults in politics today, and it's often a divided we versus them, us versus them. Maybe that's a better term. And I don't think that's wise because there's a little good in every bad person, there's a little bad in every good person.
Yeah.
And we've got to eat the fish and spit out the bones. We've got to learn to take in what we can take in that's helpful and not demonize people.
Yeah, because we're not – what the problem that I really have with it is we're not training them to try and find places of common interest.
Yes, yeah.
Because even somebody who sits on the other side of the aisle from me may still – and actually likely shares a common value with me. But if I'm trained to think they're just evil, they want the world to be worse or whatever it is that I begin to believe, it keeps me forever even starting the conversation making an assumption that we can find a center point to come in and agree on. But I just think, there was a time when we understood that. It was called civility, right?
Yeah,
was a time where we understood that, and I think we're just missing it.
We are. So I call this an unnecessary evolution. Mm. Some change is good. Some is progress. Some change is not progress. It's regress.
Yes.
So listen to this data real quick. In 2013, just a few years ago, the data shows that the most violent crimes, murders, were down as low as the numbers were 60 years earlier in 1953.
Wow.
So think about life in 1953. That's happy days.
That's
great days with a little Chevrolet and a drive-through, drive-up, restaurant. I'm telling you, the numbers were just as low in 2013, but we don't think that's true. So again, there's evil out there. This is horrible. We don't need to evolve this way. We don't need to grow this way. We don't need to develop this way. And we have the chance as adults to change the future for the better for our kids.
That's great. Yeah. So let's flip the script.
Yes.
Because I think leading Generation Z in this post 9/11 mm-hmm. world is going to require us to parent strategically if we want them to grow.
Absolutely.
And I think you've got some great advice for how to do that.
Well, it's simple advice, but maybe these would be great reminders for listeners right now. So four thoughts. We'll do them fairly rapidly, and then I want you to volley back as a young professional yourself. So strategy number one is one that I have talked to my friend Andy Stanley about many, many times. We've often said to each other over a lunch or a dinner, strategy number one, don't freak out. It's true. So if you think about teenagers, let's think just about middle school and high school kids, and even the first couple of years of college. During adolescence, kids want to push the boundaries, and they want to test their parents. How will they react if I say, I'm gender fluid? Mm-hmm. Or how will they react if I said, I drank some alcohol, or mm-hmm. whatever. You fill in the blank. Smoked yes. a cigarette, vaped, whatever.
Yeah.
So while inside, mom and dad, you might be absolutely cringing. You feel the hair on the back of your neck, standing up straight as a soldier. You know, this is crazy. The worst thing, you can just freak out, because that's exactly what they're looking for. And now they go, okay, I know how to trigger this. And that's what I thought. In fact, when we do freak out, you and I both, we both have been teenagers. Mm-hmm. It's the last time we share with mom and dad if they start freaking out over this.
Yes.
Now, listeners, let me remind you, freak out can be good or bad. They feel weird about you freaking out over whatever. They tried a cigarette or whatever. But they also feel weird about you freaking out on the optimistic side when they got an A and you know, they're going, I do not want to share any good news with you, mom.
Yeah, yeah.
You make a circus out of this thing.
Yeah.
So we've got to not freak. I don't know how to say this in scientific terms. We've got to stop freaking out and realize just a good, great job, Andrew. I'm so glad you got that A. I knew you could do it. You know, that's a much better response than freaking out and holding a circus. Yeah.
Yeah. So I just feel like we need to help our kids be at peace with their decisions.
Yeah.
When we freak out, it gives them the idea that either failure or success is this big hoopla. When we know, we realize that every decision that you make has a consequence, and that's really important.
Yeah.
But kids have got to get used to, okay, I make a decision. Maybe it wasn't the best one, but I can learn from it and grow from it. And I always talk about the difference between control and connection, right?
That's
the difference here is like if in your mind you're trying to control every single thing that your kid does, you're going to freak out about both the positives and the negatives, right?
Yeah.
You're going to celebrate it when they do something awesome or get really mad at them when they do something terrible. But if your goal is connection, then it's, that doesn't sound like maybe the best decision. Yeah. What was sort of the motivation for it?
Yeah.
You're seeking connection with them. All of a sudden, I think it makes a difference.
Huge difference. So don't think control, think connect.
Yes.
Huge. Number two, I think the second strategy for parenting a Gen Z kid, especially in our day to day, is to affirm them accurately and specifically. So the reason I threw this in is we live in a day where if you listen to the typical average American parent, we use hyperbole way too often.
Mm.
I just joked about the fact that we tell them they're awesome for putting the fork in the dishwasher or, you know, we just, and in fact, you look at a typical text message, 4 exclamation points, 1 will not do, I need 4, 5, 6 emojis, you know. And I think in this world of exaggeration and hyperbole, we start not believing it anymore realize, well, I guess she's excited there. But I think our affirmation needs to be accurate.
Yes.
So if you did a good job, say good job. Don't say it's awesome. Say it's a good job. And then secondly, I just so back up what Dr. Carol Dweck has taught us at Stanford University and earlier at Columbia University. She's a Stanford psychologist that wrote a great book called Mindset. And she says, we must affirm variables that are in their control, not out of their control.
So important.
So it might be better to say to my daughter, for instance, I love the strategy you just used on that math problem. That was so smart. Or I love how empathetic you are with your friends. That just stands out to me. I love how caring you are. As opposed to, you're gorgeous. Now, every girl probably wants to hear I'm gorgeous. So I still said that to Bethany, but it was far better for me. Gorgeous is not in her control.
Correct.
You look in the mirror and sometimes you see ugly when you are. So you want to affirm stuff that you know they can repeat that.
Yes.
What gets affirmed gets repeated. What gets, you know, rewarded gets repeated.
Yeah. And even an alternate to you're gorgeous could be, I love the outfit you chose today.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I love the way that you did your hair today.
That's
or
repeatable.
Your makeup,
yeah.
Right? Because you're affirming things that are in their control. It is so important to get kids to a place where they realize there are positive consequences to my decisions. They know there's negative consequences.
Yeah,
well, hopefully
right.
they know that.
Yeah.
But I think that that's the thing that they don't think about a lot. They think no matter what I do, the reaction is going to be the same for mom.
Yeah.
She's going to say, you're amazing, whether I do that or not, right?
Well, and we have found in our studies, Andrew, that by the time they reach middle school age, if you're still using hyperbole and exaggeration, kids just stop believe it.
Yes.
They literally think, Mom, you're the only person that thinks that way. So I don't even think you're thinking.
Yeah, especially yeah. today's kids who are more savvy yes, and authentic right. than ever yeah. before. They know exactly what success that's looks right. like because they see it on YouTube and all these places all the time. So yeah. they're not tricked by mom's overenthusiasm, right?
Yeah, that's right.
They know exactly what's going on.
That's right. So I want to pull out something you just said. You just said, instead of saying you're gorgeous, I love the makeup, or I love the dress you picked today.
Yeah.
Notice how specific that is.
Yes.
So it's not only realistic, it's specific. I just want to encourage listeners to be very thoughtful about the words you speak. Mm. Our words are heavy and they are listened to, even though you don't think they are. So just know we've got to be very accurate and very specific in our affirmation.
That's great. Okay. Number one was don't freak out. Number two, affirm them accurately and specifically. Take us to yep. number three.
Number three is be clear about their equations. Mm. I believe early childhood, well, let's say for sure elementary school age and then middle school, high school, college for sure. I think kids need to start learning equations. Now, we tend to replace equations with rules.
Yes.
And yet, Andrew, I got to be honest, I don't think I've met a kid recently, maybe in any time, that liked rules. Rules are just confining and they restrict me. And yet you and I would say, oh, no, sweetheart, I gave you that rule for your own good. Yeah, it doesn't feel that way. Equations are more neutral and they're actually how life works. Mm-hmm. So here's the difference. When our kids were growing up, we had very few rules. In fact, I encourage you, listeners, to have very few rules in your house or really in your workplace.
Yeah.
You should have lots of equations. Mm. An equation is a factor where if you do this over here, that's the benefit. If you do that, this is the consequence.
Yes.
But they learn there is a repercussion. For every action, there's an equal but opposite reaction.
Positive or negative.
That's right.
Yes.
For every action. So once they start learning equations, the key then is to follow up on them.
Yes.
If you say, if you do that, you're on your own. If you choose not to study and you don't bail them out if they did poorly on the test, you don't go negotiate with the teacher and say, he didn't get a chance to study. Yes, he did get a chance to study. Yes. He chose to watch or binge watch, you know, whatever. So I think we need to give them equations, teach them equations. This is the do this and it's a benefit, do that and that's a consequence, and then follow through.
Yes.
So if the follow through is you said they're going to lose their phone for a day or two, if they do that and then they do that, follow up on that. Will it be hard on you? Mm-hmm. You just said that, so follow up. Otherwise, your words just start feeling
yep.
hollow.
Yep.
I can push mom around or dad or whatever, and it never gets followed up on.
Think about how this is connected to locus of control, which I think is really yeah. fascinating. That's where the power of this comes from. If it's a rule, it's my mom or dad's opinion or
yes.
their morality
yeah.
or their belief. And it's opposed to my friend's parents'
yeah.
beliefs. Like,
yeah.
my friend doesn't have that rule at his house. Why do I have
yeah,
to follow
that's
it
right.
here?
Yeah.
Right? So it becomes, if you establish a rule, the kid thinks, this is just my parents being my parents.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you establish an equation, then the weight is not on the parents'
that's
thought
right.
process. The weight is on my own decision making.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is very accurate to how life is and
yeah.
is preparing them mentally for the dealing with the repercussions of a decision that they're gonna make.
No doubt.
And that's where the power is, I think.
Yeah. In fact, listeners, I would even say, think about your life right now. You're a grown adult. It's full of equations.
Yes.
I often smile when I say, try not paying your mortgage payment this month. That's an equation.
Yeah.
You'll get a note from the bank. They don't yell or scream, but oh my gosh, I've got an extra charge now or whatever it is. And don't do it long enough and you lose a house. So
yeah.
that's an equation. Kids need to get used to appropriate levels of equations from childhood on through young adulthood.
Couldn't agree more. Okay, so we've been through three. Give us the fourth one.
So by the way, that one is don't think rules, think equations.
Yes.
Okay. The last one I want to give here is model consistency.
Mm.
I cannot underscore this enough. My father turns 89 years old this year, and I would say the number one added value, there were several, but the added value to my life as a dad was he was Mr. Consistency. It predictable, and that sounds terrible. No, it was really good.
Yeah.
Life is so unpredictable in so many ways. It's so good to have adult leaders that are just steady Eddie. Consistent day in and day out. Think about the times we live in, and I don't want to be too crude here, but couples divorcing, jobs are changing, rules are updated, TV shows are terminated, change is happening. It's the one thing kids do know is going to happen is change. Wouldn't it be cool if they could say, I look at that guy or look at that woman, And she is so consistent. She cares about us. She talks to me every day.
Yes.
She actually thinks I'm important and I can do it. Don't underestimate the power of consistent life. Now, here's the good news about consistency. You can do it.
Yes.
No gifts or talents are necessary. No high IQ, thank God. No high IQ is necessary. It's just do what you know is right and do it day in and day out. Nick Saban calls it the process.
Yes.
Do the process well. So.
That's so good. It's so good. Stability is in every adult's control, right?
Yeah.
There are things that are probably out of your control, but there are things that you can do to create stability in your home. And there's probably so many studies that are talking about the power of a kid knowing there's something in my life that I can rely upon,
right?
Because that's not true of so much of their life. So even just simple habits that you could create in your family where, you know, every Thursday night, my family does game night or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And there are lots of other things that you need to do. But I'm just saying, like, those kinds of things could really help create a sense of home, a sense of peace, a sense of grounding.
No doubt about it. So in our home, it was pretty simple. It was family meals 4 out of 7 nights at least. That meant they didn't do 17 extracurricular activities.
Yes.
But they knew we're going to sit down, we're going to process the day, we're going to laugh, but we're going to have a steady time of discussion and interpretation of life. That's where Habitudes got their beginning, at our dinner table. But that consistency, I help think. I speak for a living. I think it helped bring security to our kids' lives.
Yeah.
Let me give you a metaphor that I'm thinking
Please.
About. You and I have been in places where the internet is predictable and where it's been spotty.
Yes.
You know the feeling you have if you're going to a place, you go, oh, the internet's always spotty here. You're really iffy, aren't you?
Yeah.
I hope I can get this email out. I don't know.
Yeah. I try and do my work before I get there kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, I'm telling you, if our leadership is spotty, like bad internet, they're not sure. In fact, they're probably not going to trust. And we want trust.
Yeah.
So I want that little metaphor to haunt you in a wonderful way now, listeners. If you're like spotty internet, it's just not going to be helpful and they're not going to trust it.
So good. So good. Okay. I want to read these four strategies again because I think they're really useful. So these are four strategies for parenting Generation Z. Number one, it's simple, but it's important. Don't freak out.
Yeah,
they need you to be steady, especially emotionally supportive.
Whatever they say, don't freak out.
Exactly. Okay. Number two, affirm them accurately and specifically. And this is helping with that growth mindset. Number three, be clear about their equations. So we're thinking not rules, but we're thinking equations.
Yep.
There are consequences for the decisions that you make.
Yep.
And then number four, model consistency. Create that stability. Always be the same person. And that's going to help sort of ground them in this ever-changing world.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is great advice, Tim. Thank you so much. If you're listening to this and saying, that's awesome, but I want more, Tim wrote a book just a few years ago that I think is so helpful. It's really helped thousands of people. It's called 12 Huge Mistakes That Parents Can Avoid. And it basically is what it sounds like it is. It's a book for understanding the mistakes that are easy to make and really common to make in the 21st century, and how parents can correct those mistakes and help their kids become healthy adults who are ready for their future, for their career, for all those things. So if you want to get that book, go to growingleaders.com and head to our store, and you'll find 12 Huge Mistakes Parents Can Avoid there. I want to encourage you, if you could, follow us on social media. We'd love to connect with you there. We've been hearing from a couple of you about the podcast, and that's really exciting for us. So we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter as well. If you could rate this podcast, that helps get the word out about what we're doing here, and it's so helpful to us. And then, as always, we love to hear from you, and we've designed an email for that, podcast@growingleaders.com. Shoot us an email. Let us know people you want us to interview or topics you want us to address. We love getting those messages from you. Tim, thank you so much for leading us.
My pleasure.
In this conversation. I hope it was helpful to you as the listener, and we'll see you next time.